Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is one of our favorite people, Casey Seiler, state editor and Capital Bureau Chief for the Albany Times Union, and one of the hosts of Public Television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Welcome back, Casey. Always good to see you here.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so now, big story in the Times, you guys covered it, and it's the Dannemora prison beating allegations. Can you bring us up to date? What was that, and what do we expect to see come out of this?
Well, it's far too early to answer that last question, but what we're talking about is a report in the New York Times earlier this week, investigative report sort of detailing allegations from prisoners in Clinton Correctional Facility, popularly known as Dannemora, that following the early June escape of, you know, the two convicts who were on the run for 3 weeks, finally recaptured, one of them killed, there were harsh interrogations of the prisoners who were in what's known as the honor block, which is the area of the prison, the cell block, essentially, where these guys broke out of. And one of the prisoners who made these allegations is the guy who Governor Cuomo sort of exchanged a couple of words with when he was getting the tour of the prison the day after the break. Cuomo, you know, sort of sidled up to the guy's cell door and said, "Boy, that all that cutting," meaning the prisoner's cutting, "must have kept you awake at night, huh?" And in the Times story,
he's being sardonic.
Is rather sardonic. Yes, I think so. He says the governor gave him, you know, his best tough guy stare and then walked away. And later, allegedly, this guy was, in the sort of classic formulation, taken into a small room and kind of worked over. And these are, of course, all allegations at this point. The state Inspector General Catherine Leahy Scott is looking into this as part of sort of her global investigation into the causes and the particulars of the escape, including, one would assume, what went wrong in the prison processes, and I one would hope that also the pursuit, sort of where the pursuit might have gone a bit awry as well. But that's going to be a long time in the formulation. The State Correctional Officers Union has come out and called this, you know, a one-sided press report. The union, of course, which is, you know, sort of on the defensive in all this, because of course a correctional officer has already been implicated in assisting these guys, but you know, they say they're going to wait until all the facts are out in sort of official form,
otherwise known as the thin gray line. And I can't help, maybe I'm just too much of a wise guy, but I can't help picturing the IG pulling the corrections people into a small room and beating them up to get the truth out of it. I don't think that's
the IG
happen.
Is not known for the rubber hose technique at all. And of course, the Times Union, in an editorial
paper, yes.
Yeah, that ran this week, said the IG is not independent enough to look at this, because of course there have been allegations made that one of the contributing factors to the escape is the fact that things like overtime was tightly constricted in the weeks leading up to it. Our paper, Brendan Lyons, reported that there was kind of
your
a melee.
Your investigative
our
reporter.
Outstanding investigative reporter, Brendan Lyons, reported that there was a melee a couple of days before the escape. In most prisons where there's a melee like that, there is a lockdown and then the cells are tossed. If these guys' cells had been tossed, they probably would have discovered the gaping holes that had been, you know, cut in the wall, where they had essentially been kind of going subterranean and doing a considerable amount of excavation work to tunnel out of the facility, essentially. It really is incredible.
So we have heard repeated stories, whether they're true or not, about an underground economy in these prisons in which drugs and other things are brought in by COs. And now we have the chickens coming home. I mean, I think that this could lead to a look at the way in which our prisons are being run.
It is hard to imagine that when the dust settles and all the facts are out, this does not result in a wholesale reworking. There's already been a change in top leadership at the prison, at Clinton Correctional Facility. It is hard to imagine that this will not work all the way up to the State Department of Corrections, known as DOCS.
Still, Casey, the basic unfairness of what we're hearing seems pretty incredible. You punish the guys who didn't escape. You punish the guys.
Right.
You transfer them. You take their privileges away. Whatever they're making in terms of their hourly wage, which is, you know, very small, but you make sure that they're not getting that anymore. There seems to be something Dickensian or out of this whole thing.
Prisons are not known as they are frequently referred to as being Dickensian environments. You know, we could go deep into the Michel Foucault reading of prison life as well. But what you're referring to is the fact that the Times story noted that a lot of the prisoners who are on the honor block have been shifted away, transferred in many cases to other prisons. And yes, they've lost privileges. They find their pay reduced, and they say we have done nothing wrong. Now, that in fact has not been proven either. I mean, it's true that these guys almost certainly made a big racket.
Well, but they transferred a lot of people out of there.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yes. The only person who has been proven and convicted of playing a role is Joyce Mitchell, I believe is her name,
Indeed.
Who is the prison employee who apparently was smitten by one and or both of the convicts and brought in material. There is a CO who has been charged, but I don't think has been convicted yet. Of helping them bring in material in exchange in a very bizarre twist for paintings or illustrations that were done by one of the convicts of celebrities. And, I mean, you talk about a black market economy. One would not think that there would be an art market in a prison, but that's apparently one of the things that was involved here.
Not to draw any relationship, but Hitler's paintings are going for a lot right now, too.
I don't know what to make of that. Hitler, of course, a failed art student,
No question.
If only he had ended up in prison for a lot longer time than he did.
Can you imagine walking around your living room and showing a guest and saying, this is an original Hitler?
Well, Hitler, John Wayne Gacy, there's a very strange, kind of underground economy in psychopath art, I guess you could say. We're getting far afield from state government, though.
Well, that's what I like to do. Okay, let's do ethics, if
All
we
right.
can. Governor Cuomo, from the first day he ran for office, said he was going to clean up Albany. And then he got a real series of black eyes for some of the commissions and other groups that he set up that were either do nothing or really not terribly effective. And then he really got a black eye with his Moreland Act commission when he stopped that. There were a lot of people who thought that when he did that, that there were going to be serious considerations of legal action, felonious action against members of his administration, if not him. That doesn't seem to have panned out, right?
No, not yet.
Well, the yet is getting to be a little bit long in the tooth.
It is, but then again, we are only, 2.5 months away from the indictment of Dean Skelos. We are 6-7 months away,
Dean
I guess,
Skelos,
now.
Just for the people
I'm
who
sorry,
are
the, the Senate Republican leader,
right.
Who was, of course, the second legislative leader to have to face federal charges. We're only 6-7 months away from the indictment of Assembly Democratic Speaker Sheldon Silver. Both of those leaders are, of course, out of power. So, these things are playing out at a pace. But in other words, if you look at the fact that the case against Silver and the case against Skelos were brought essentially about 4 months apart, three, four months apart. if you look at it pace wise, you could say we're about due for another one again. But of course, that's just a wishful big story reporter thinking on my part. But
and yet, Casey Siler, we see the specter of the Vice President of the United States showing up at LaGuardia Airport, turning around and saying to the press, Governor Cuomo is one of the best governors in the United States.
Yep.
You know, even people like Pete Bharara, the fighting U.S. attorney, have to worry about what the president or vice president might be saying in a case like this.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't think that a compliment from Joe Biden on Governor Cuomo's infrastructure achievements or achievements in the making is exactly a kind of magic shield against federal prosecution.
Well, not to fight with you, but but he didn't say one of the best governors in terms of construction. He said one of the best governors in the United States. I wondered about that. Anyway, it's always fun. So is there anything that we can expect in ethics? A lot of people want special sessions on ethics. You got these two major leaders being replaced. You have the assistant head in the Senate being convicted and thrown out of the Senate. What in fact is going on?
Right. Not only that, you're referring to Tom Libous, who was convicted of Binghamton, Republican deputy majority leader of the Senate for a good long time, a kind of a tragic figure in the sense that he's been battling prostate cancer for years and years, 5 years now, I guess. And also the exact same week, within 48 hours, you had John Sampson, a Senate former conference leader of the Democrats who rose to power after the 2009 coup, also convicted on federal charges. So bing bam, that's two leaders, one a sitting leader, one a former leader.
And don't forget Malcolm Smith.
Malcolm Smith, of course, that was about 6 months ago, his conviction. He was out of office, though, at the time. Somehow, voters wised up and tossed him out of office last year.
Which they almost never do. I mean, we've had a number of guys who are indicted who get reelected.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, Libous was reelected despite the fact that he was under federal indictment. Sampson was reelected. Sampson's reelection was due to the fact that there was kind of a crush of candidates that were brought against him. So in the wake of that kind of those double convictions, and of course, once they're convicted of a felony, boop, you are out of the Senate, you know, automatically. The minute that guilty verdict is read, you're done. As you noted, there were calls to come back for a special session. The governor has said, look, I despite these convictions, I see no change in the legislature's willingness to go further than they went in the budget negotiation on ethics fixes.
Yes, but are we really sure, Casey Siler, that the governor wants ethics reform? I mean, I don't think there's any question that he likes having, for example, the Republicans still in power.
It works for him, without a doubt. Yes.
And you know, that all of this strump and drum and we're going to have ethics reform, and then he comes up with these verschlugene, nonsensical fixes, which turn out to be not fixes at all. One has to wonder whether he really wants ethics reform.
Well, he wants, I think what we can say for sure is that he wants to be seen as wanting ethics reform.
Yeah.
Yes. And of course, he had the 5-point ultimatum that he demanded in the budget negotiation. He got, in fact, 4 of the 5, one of them, pension forfeiture for lawmakers that would be retroactive to cover already sitting lawmakers, was supposed to be a done deal. The assembly ended up getting cold feet. They said,
why?
They basically said this would make state officers eligible for pension forfeiture if they are convicted of charges related to their public office. Now, this has to be a constitutional change because, of course, you can't change the terms of a pension agreement, a public pension agreement. And the constitutional, whenever you pass a constitutional change, the language of that legislation is usually pretty broad. It is followed by what's known as enacting legislation that really kind of drills down on the particulars. The Senate, at the end of the budget negotiation, passed the proposed constitutional amendment, which, not to get too weedy, has to be passed by 2 consecutively elected legislatures. So basically that means if they passed it this spring, they would have to pass it again in 2017 because the legislature that is going to be elected next year has to pass it, the second consecutively a list.
Yeah, but Casey, if the assembly doesn't go along, there's a...
Right, there's exactly,
a,
nothing's going to
happen. There's a well-known game in Albany, yeah, which is...
One house passes
the
it.
The assembly passes stuff, yeah, all the time, mm-hmm, but quite sure that the Republicans in the Senate won't do it, or the opposite.
And vice versa.
And that may be what's happening.
But what happened here is that when that legislation was considered by the assembly, Carl Hastie, the new speaker, agreed to it, and then when his members kind of got a look at it, many public workers unions said, whoa, 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 this is too broad, that under the language of this constitutional change, the lowliest state worker could potentially be roped in, you know, if somebody, I don't know, Pickett, you know, steals a box of pencils, they could end up having their pension taken away, what a tragedy for the family, that kind of thing. What the governor, what the governor's council and what the Senate says is, that is the kind of thing that you work out in enacting legislation. So the assembly ended up passing a bill that was big and fat and essentially served as the enacting legislation as well as the constitutional change. The Senate took no action. Nothing got done. So the governor didn't get point 5 of his ethics ultimatum.
My point exactly. I mean, that's the way the game is played. Let's talk a little bit about all of Andrew Cuomo's trading partners. Let's start with special prosecutor for crimes. We have seen a spate of crimes or alleged crimes by police against unarmed black people. And he comes along and says, okay, I'm appointing Eric Schneiderman as basically special prosecutor in these cases. The DAs, including DA Soares here in Albany, mm-hmm, is furious about the whole thing. What can you tell us?
Well, this was the result of Cuomo's failure to get something done. What he said was by the end of the 2015 legislative session, he wanted legislation to create some kind of special monitor to look at these cases. Cases like Eric Garner in Staten Island, you know, police involved civilian deaths, specifically when an unarmed civilian is involved.
And the theory being that prosecutors and police are too close, they have to do this.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And also because of the way our grand jury system works, often the prosecution of these cases when they're put before a grand jury is opaque to the general public. They don't know whether or not the DA essentially kind of gave it his or her all. And what Cuomo said was, if I don't get legislation to create a special monitor, which is, I think, the best way to do this, I am going to name the attorney general to be the special prosecutor to look at these cases. Legislature took no action. They, especially in the Senate, they sort of stand with the DAs. And so that's what the governor did. And as you noted, the DAs immediately raised a hue and cry and said, first of all, there's all kinds of gray areas here that we don't know how the protocol is going to work. In other words, are the AG's investigators supposed to sweep in immediately after one of these cases occurs, one of these deaths occur, or are we supposed to do the initial investigation or what? And so for the last couple of weeks, the AG's office and the governor's office and the district attorneys have been trying to hash it out. There was a very good story in Politico New York just a couple of days ago about meetings between the AG's office and the DA's where they're trying to hash out what's known as a memorandum of understanding that would lay out some of the particulars of how this kind of thing would work. The AG is already looking at one case, the death of a woman in police custody in, I believe, Westchester County.
Now, there's a political background to all of this, too. We know that Andrew Cuomo has been accused of not playing well with others in the sandbox. Eric Schneiderman is no exception, who is his attorney general. And we know that
he's not his attorney general. He is the attorney general.
Well, if you're Andrew, he's his attorney general. And Andrew Cuomo now gives him what he asked for in the first place, which was this authority. Is there a change in the weather?
I think there is a change in the weather. I think I don't know if it's so much Cuomo trying to salve his relationship or kind of close the breach with Eric Schneiderman, who he has tangled with in the past, as much as it is Cuomo trying to appease and make nice with the kind of progressive wing of the Democratic Party that felt badly alienated from him at the end of the 2014 election cycle, which involved charges that the governor wasn't doing enough to try to win the Senate for Democrats, Although I think the governor makes a very good case when he says there was nothing in that type of electoral climate that or political climate that the governor could have done that would have helped Democrats win the state Senate. But
by the way, you may think he made a good point. I don't. I think he could have worked much harder to elect Democrats.
Well, yes, he could have worked much harder. I don't know if it would have changed the outcome in terms of winning the Senate for Democrats. When you look at some of
one or two seats would have done it.
Yeah, but when you look at some of those races, very few of them were close. Most of them were blowouts, including the race right around here between George Amador and Cecilia Kacik. I mean, that was an absolute trouncing. So, but yes, you're right. He could have done more, without a doubt.
He promised to do more, and he didn't do more.
Yes, there is no doubt about that.
Casey, as long as we're talking about it's the sandbox.
Yes.
Talk to me about Bill de Blasio. This thing between Cuomo and de Blasio kills both of them. It hurts both of them. And yet they continue to take body blows.
It is absolutely the political story of the summer, and I guess we're now kind of about 6 weeks into it, and you know, it really is amazing. These two, who the governor keeps insisting that they are best friends, you know, their relationship goes back to their work together at HUD for Bill Clinton, but they clearly find themselves at odds. The worst breach was right after the legislative session, where de Blasio came out and said the governor did not work hard enough for the people of New York, especially progressive causes that are, of course, very important to the mayor. There have been sort of backroom arguments about staff hires. Karen Hinton, who is who's a spokesman for de Blasio, was hired away from Cuomo, and he apparently felt bruised over that. But more recently, it's involved the city and the state's response to this terrible outbreak of Legionnaires' disease in the city, where it initially seemed that the city, or at least the state, was more involved in seeming like it was kind of one-upping de Blasio, who clearly his response was roundly criticized in many quarters. That the city wasn't doing enough to address this health concern.
So it's another opportunity for Andrew to criticize de Blasio.
Yes, and of course that seems very cynical when we're talking about a health scare, which is very serious. But there were things like dueling press conferences and dueling press releases giving.
And not the first time.
Not at all. Not quite parallel information. They have tried. Earlier this week, there was finally a joint press release from both sides, and hopefully going forward, we will see a slightly more coordinated response. This is not the first time that a health scare has resulted in this sort of push-me-pull-you between the state and the city. You may remember it occurred in the Ebola crisis, when it often seemed like the city and the state were kind of working, if not at cross purposes, in sort of silos.
Well, you can do substantive analysis if you want. I always like to see the personalities involved in this. And frankly, I think they're going to do each other in. And I watched it with
mutual assured destruction.
I am old enough to have remembered Lindsay and Rockefeller
doing
exactly the same thing to each other.
Yes, have you read the Rockefeller biography that came out
very
last
good,
summer?
Very good,
terrific
strong.
Book. Yeah. And I was amazed at the Lindsay Rockefeller wars.
It was
but,
unbelievable.
I mean, isn't it?
You
you've
were
been
amazed,
watching this,
but I was here.
You've been watching this a lot longer than I have. Isn't the relationship between the mayor of New York City and the governor of New York State always a fraught power dynamic relationship?
It doesn't have to be. Both of those guys, Lindsay and Rockefeller, were running for president, they thought. And I think some of that is going on right here. You have de Blasio running around the country saying, I'm the left-winger in charge. I'm in charge of the political left. Mm-hmm. And you got Andrew, who has been accused of not being enough on that side. And they're duking it out. Well, Casey, I wish I could sit here and talk to you for the next 1,000 years. But right now, we're done. We're out of time. Our guest has been the great Casey Seiler, state editor and Capitol Bureau chief for the Albany Times-Union. Casey is one of the hosts of Public Television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Casey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me on.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.